They get all upset.
They're supposed to, but...
The Legislative Commission on Pensions and Retirement will come to order. How many members think we should have just come into session? My schedule's been pretty brutal the last few days, so... We have scheduled a series of meetings, hopefully, to deal with all of the, as much of the pension matters as we can before March 1st. We had a slight glitch. All the directors are going to be out of town on February. All the pension fund directors are going to be out of town at a convention on February 6th and 7th, I think it is. So we've rescheduled those. So, Lisa, why don't you tell us what our new dates are here for...
The new dates are February 14th at 9 a.m. and February 15th at 9 a.m. They are posted on our website, and I did send out a notice on the listserv late yesterday afternoon.
And we're going to try...
So not the 6th and 7th?
Correct.
Not the 6th and 7th. I made a mistake. The fund directors had told me they were going to be at a out of town, I think in Washington, D.C., and I forgot to tell my staff. So it was my fault. I think we're going to try to handle all those individual bills as a full commission so we don't have to hear them twice. I've asked the staff to go through all those individual bills that have been on the agenda and give us a sense of which ones are going to have a hard time getting commission approval. I'm going to see if I can't do some talking to authors to see if we can reduce the number of those bills. My policy is if an author wants it heard, I'm going to hear it. But I'm going to try to give them a sense that maybe that's a bill that might not get commission approval. Do you really want to hear it? A few of them might then say, okay, let's not go through that exercise. So, does that work for members? We've done a subcommittee in the past, but the commission staff is... I don't know if I want to blame the whole staff. I'll blame Larry. Larry's advised that if you do a subcommittee, you end up actually hearing them twice because the individuals want to come to both meetings. And so maybe it's better just to do it. We're gathering proposals. I've signed a few bills today. I think, Steve, we have to get them to you. Some of the funds have come in with their technical bills. We need to get them to you. And I think the last meeting... whatever that date was, will hit all those kind of technical bills that the funds and stuff have. Today we're going to, item one is an item that will take testimony on stuff. Items two and three will be pretty much a review of what has passed the Senate. There is work going on regarding the fund consolidation Minneapolis teachers issue, but I think that needs some more work with various parties, and so I don't think we'll take up any new ideas today on that. To the extent the House wants to talk about anything, that's fine, but otherwise we can just keep working on it. We have, on the Minneapolis teachers, I'll report a series of meetings, and then the House can add. I've personally met with the executive branch, I think, and with the auditor. I think there's a lot of interest in trying to solve the Minneapolis problem, and I think there's going to have to be some flexibility all around because kind of a pure solution may not have the votes in the legislature, and so there may have to be some tweaking. So, but people are working on it. People are interested. The Chief of Staff Gaither said the governor would like to get it solved if we could. Commissioner Finance said she'd like to get it solved if we could. The auditor's been working on this. So, Representative Thiessen or Smith, do you want to add how you're trying to nudge things forward? You don't have to.
I think I would agree with everything you said, but I think people are, Mr. Chair, I think people are very interested in moving forward and have been creative and cooperative, I think, going forward. And so we need to just have a few more conversations. And but my hope is that by before session, we can get something at least to the pension commission for discussion and hopefully pass it out of here. So,
okay,
Mr. Chair,
Representative Murphy.
In your conversations with Chief of Staff
Gaither,
was there any money forthcoming for that?
Well, that's one of the things I think people are going to have to be flexible on.
Without money, there can't be very much flexibility, Mr. Chair.
It's hard to solve some of these problems without some money, but, you know, I think there's a spirit of cooperation in the air, and I think people are looking for ways to figure this out.
Good.
Okay, why don't we take up item one? Mr. Burek, and again, I want to just say for anybody in the audience, on two and three, we're basically just going to kind of review what has passed the Senate and take any discussion among the commission members. And I think the House, for various reasons, didn't move on some of those items, and I think we just need to figure out a way to allow the House the opportunity to figure out what can work in their body and move forward. Okay, Mr. Burek, on item number one.
Members, there's a memo in your packet on Senate File 70, House File 40. And this is a proposal to create a 5% cap on annual increases from the State Board of Investment Post Fund. The Post Fund is the investment vehicle, and the returns for that Post Fund create post-retirement increases for the MSRS, TRA, and PARA funds. Now, in the memo, I provide a history of the various forms of the post fund that we've had, which started in 1970. Some of these were based on yield rather than total return. Others were based on total return. Some cases, the return was based on 1 year's performance, some cases two, some years five. So it's varied over time. One comment we could make, though, is that the post fund hasn't been particularly successful in keeping people whole. By keeping people whole, we mean providing increases that match inflation. In part, it's because the design of the post fund usually reflected an effort of looking into the past, seeing what went wrong, and make that correction to make sure that you won't be harmed in the same way. But by looking into the past and rather the future, we have tended to wind up with a post fund that it really hasn't been well designed to meet the future needs. On page 5 of the memo, there is a chart there which shows the return, or the increases rather, that have been provided by the post fund, and compared to the consumer price index. And this is from 1977 through 2004. There was some form of post fund that existed a little bit earlier, but apparently we didn't have data to use in this table. What is very evident from looking at that chart or graph is that the increases that have been provided simply haven't matched the inflation that has been occurring. There are a few periods where the inflation is considerably in excess of the returns that have been, of the increases that have been provided by the various post fund variations. But in most cases, what we have had is increases in the retiree benefits, which have been considerably in excess of inflation. Now, as we go to the most recent periods, 2003, 2004, and the current year, 2005, 2006, what we are now seeing is, and this is in part information on the table and in part just continuing on into the future, what we have now gotten into is a period where it's likely there will be moderate inflation, and it is also likely that the post fund increases will be minimal. So we are likely to have a period, and it could be a considerably long period, minimum of 10, 12 years, where the post fund is likely to provide increases only matching inflation up to 2.5%, and any amounts above that would not be covered. The proposal of this bill is to cap post fund increases at 5%. Now, that is in part motivated by looking backwards at what happened, and if you look at page 5 again, at what happened during the 80s and much of the 90s, particularly during the 90s. What happened in the 1990s is we had a very strong stock market. The post fund is heavily invested in stocks. The returns were very high. Therefore, the post-retirement increases were very high, considerably in excess of inflation. And then as we went into the new century, the stock market really dipped considerably. And when it did, the returns to the post fund dipped considerably and, in fact, were negative in some years. And so what happened was that all the reserves that could have been used in the last few years to provide slightly better increases were paid out in the form of guaranteed benefits for the remaining lifetime of the individuals in the late 1990s. So we're actually now in a period where the post fund is less than fully funded. And because of the way the post fund operates, the investment markets will have to provide enough assets to rebuild those reserves so that we get the post fund back to 100% funded before we can even begin the process of generating additional reserves to cover benefit increases. So we are now in a period where it is likely that post fund increases will be minimal for the foreseeable future. Moving to the policy issues on page 7, I would mention that there is an issue of the extent of support by the interested parties. And one thing I would point out to the Commission is that the proposal in this bill is not something that is in the interest of the existing retirees. Because if you're an existing retiree, the only thing the proposal in the bill could do is to delay some of the increases that would have otherwise occur some years in the future when, in fact, we get into a period, hopefully, where there will be some excess reserves to start distributing. So what it will do for existing retirees is push out any additional increases that they would get further into the future. That delay reduces their value, and in some cases, these retirees may not be there to benefit from those increases when they occur. So there is an argument to be made that this proposal harms the existing retirees. That does create a situation where there could be litigation on this issue. Now, if the litigation were successful, there might be a need to come up with enough assets to keep the existing retirees whole and a need possibly to create two post funds, one for the existing retirees looking very much as it does right now, and possibly another one for current active members, which would have the 5% cap. So things could get complicated depending on just what happens. Another issue is the question of consistency with federal regulations. If you look at some of the attachments which I've received from the pension fund directors, there is some discussion amongst the directors and some of their advisors about whether the current post fund and this proposed change in the post fund would be consistent with Internal Revenue Code regulations under 401A9. As I say, the materials are attached, and I'll let the fund directors try to present their case there. briefly to summarize the issue, though, is that we have a system where increases are generated by investment performance. And that type of system does seem to be consistent with the federal regulations, providing that the underlying interest rate that is used is at least 3%. Now, since we're at 6%, that would not be an issue. But what is an issue is the form of averaging that we used. There's some discussion which would suggest that when there's some excess assets that are generated, that they would have to be paid out very, very soon after that occurs, within that year or the next year. So using five-year averaging, which pushes some of these excess return amounts out into the future for several years, may cause a problem. Now, we can argue, again, based on some language in the attachments, that our system would be grandfathered. So as long as it's not changed, there wouldn't be a problem. But the cap could be a substantive change. It could be viewed as a substantive change. So the commission may wish to have the directors review some of that material and present their case as to why this is a change which can be made without causing federal compliance problems. I also note that this is a somewhat temporary. The proposed solution is somewhat temporary in nature. And it is, again, a solution that results from looking backwards. What happened in the 90s was we had these very high returns, but it was all paid out because there was no cap in place. So the proposal now is to put a cap in place. The problem with a cap, though, is that if we do run into a period of very high inflation in excess of 5%, then there will be complaints that revised post fund is now harming individuals and that it needs to be revised again to provide higher returns in years where there are very high inflation rates. I also note it's inconsistent with the Commission's principles of pension policy, but all prior post funds have been. What the Commission's principle statement says is that what we should have is benefits which are adequate at the time of retirement, and then a system in place which keeps those benefits adequate over time. A system like we've had in the past, which doesn't match inflation, and one like the proposed, which would cap any increase at 5%, is not fully consistent with that principle. There is an issue of the proper cap level. The proposal is 5%. You might want to consider some other level. If you had a 4% cap, that would aggravate the situation when we have high inflation because the cap would be that much more inadequate. On the other hand, a 6% or 7% even cap would be better in a situation where there's high inflation, but it is less adequate in terms of saving excess assets for a rainy day. The final issue I mentioned there is the treatment of the excess. As the bill is drafted, the language doesn't really say what should occur with these excess assets when they occur, assets that are in excess of the increase that can be provided because the cap is hit. So I do have a few amendments that would take care of that situation, and those are noted in the memo. One would place
any excess. Members can read that. Members can read that. Okay. Further comments? Okay. Ms. Vanek, Mr. Bergstrom. Welcome, Mr. Austin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Mary Vanek. I'm the director of PERA. I'm going to go over a brief presentation of a handout that Lisa is currently distributing and then make some comments on the memo. And up front, I'd like to say that I think Ed did an excellent job of reviewing the history of the post fund and commenting on the recent experience of the retirees in the post fund with the increases that have been awarded. He does raise some legal issues with respect to litigation from current retirees and federal compliance, and I will also try to address that. The handout is something that we used last year in talking to individual legislators about the three statewide boards' position on the post fund. We revisited why the post fund was established, and it was established to make sure that benefits to retirees are fully funded, to provide some measure of inflation protection, and we cap that at 2.5%, and then to share with retirees investment gains as a result of the investment of the post fund. The expectation is that that would add an additional 1 to 2% above the 2.5% inflation guarantee, but as we all know, the stock market performance of the 90s proved us wrong in that regard. The next page shows you what we experienced, similar to the line chart that Ed has in his memo, and shows you how our increases in most years far exceeded the rate of inflation. But as we had cautioned members and attempted to provide a fix at the beginning of the century in 2000, in anticipation that a market decline would significantly erode, if not wipe out, the excess investments that were being held for future distribution. We weren't successful in that regard, so we paid out those excess investment earnings, and now we have a deficit in the post fund that has to be made up before we can pay any more than up to the inflation guarantee. The next chart shows you a history of what occurred. The assets continued to build. The reserves continued to increase as we paid higher benefits through higher increases and more people were retiring. Recent experience in PERA shows that our number of retirements have declined since the post-retirement adjustments have declined. We currently have a $4.1 billion deficit in the post fund. The good news is that we actually have brought that down through investment performance, but that is what we have to make up. That's what we have to make up to break even, and then thereafter investment gains could be shared.
Just on that point, if the world stopped today, you'd be 4.1 million short.
Billion.
Billion, I'm
yes.
Sorry, billion. But we are talking about reserves. We're not talking about actual.
Yes, Mr. Chair. This is money held in reserve for the lifetime payouts to the individuals participating. There's no cash flow concern here. There is plenty of money in the post-retirement fund.
And there is some margin of estimation in that reserve number because we're estimating how long someone will live.
Mr. Chair, that's correct.
Suggested chair.
But Mr. Martin?
Members, there is an uncertainty as to the longevity of other retirees in the post fund. Mortality gains or losses are assessed each year, and transfers back and forth are made based on mortality gain or loss, however the net number is.
The next chart shows you an analysis done by TRA's actuary a couple of years ago in preparation to discuss this with the joint boards. And what it does show is that while the retirees' benefits would not have increased as significantly had the 5% cap been in place, they still would have increased each year. The rate of inflation historically has averaged about 3.1%, so even at 5%, they would have exceeded inflation. And there would have only been one year where we would have had a deficit in the post fund. We would have recovered quite quickly. So although it's hindsight is 20/20, it does give us some sense that a 5% cap could work with the intent of our proposal. The next chart is just a high-level analysis of what is it going to take to recover that $4.1 billion. If we are lucky and hit home runs with the State Board of Investment for the next 5 years, an average of 15% return, we could recover within about 5 years. If we are just barely over our assumed 8.5%, it's going to take quite some time. We've estimated on average 27 years to recover the, from the deficit, and then beyond that is when we'd be able to share investment gains.
That's kind of in the long term, we're all dead.
I'd like to emphasize.
Economists always say, here's the short term result, and in the long term, we're all dead.
I'd like to emphasize that our proposal does nothing to speed up that recovery. The 5% cap would only apply in the future once we did reach over 100% funding and had investment gains to share again. The good news is that between over the last couple of years, we've paid out the 2.5% inflation guarantee, and we've still reduced the deficit by $1 billion. So that was good news. The other thing that we were asked by the three boards when we were trying to come up with ideas for what the fix would be is what other pension funds do around the country. 34 of the funds in the survey that we reviewed provide a fixed percentage. 38 map their increase to CPI, but generally do not pay the full measure of CPI, cap at 3 or 4%. Four of them are purely investment related. Eight are CPI plus investments. Seven of those eight are the Minnesota funds. The other one, I believe, is Wisconsin.
That's correct.
20 are ad hoc, and six are some other form of increases. The boards were interested to know if we should go forward with redesigning the entire system. I know the PERA board had many meetings on it, but we all concluded jointly that we wanted to go forward with the proposal that's before you. We want to maintain post-fund increases with a guarantee at 2.5%, up to 2.5% for inflation. We want to cap future increases at 5% when investments can again be shared, and that any money remaining in the fund that is earned above and beyond what needs to support that cap would stay in the fund and be used in the future when investments aren't as good and we don't have a lot of money to share to offset the effects of down markets that we just experienced, so we don't go back into this type of a deficiency in the post fund in the future. But again, that's first we have to recover. There's no immediate gain to the post fund through the 5% cap. One of the reasons that we have brought this forward at this point in time is that the sooner we get this in place, the sooner retirees, both current and future, will understand what to expect in the form of their increases through the post-fund, the post-retirement fund. The analysis that Ed provided on how those increases have provided significant growth in pensions, I thought was very good, and I hope to use some of it in meetings I'm having with some retirees. One of the things that he points out is that the intent is to keep retirees whole. We are not promoting to our members that this is the post fund was intended to keep retirees whole. What it was intended to do was to provide some level of increase throughout their retirement lifetime to help offset the effects of inflation and maintain some level of purchasing power. But we believe it's unrealistic to guarantee that we could map specifically to a cost of living measure and match that up to its full value, because in poor investment years, you wouldn't have the money to do that, and you'd dig yourself farther in the hole, which is why we capped the guaranteed inflation piece and said that only when we have investment returns above what is needed to support that would we pay additional. Ed points out that, you know, we're looking backward here. Well, unfortunately, when we tried to project forward 6 or 7 years ago, nobody wanted to listen to us. I was looking through my file last night, and I recall getting a letter from somebody that said, I just talked to my financial advisor, and they said, the stock market's not going to fall. What were we talking about? Were we just trying to scare retirees? And now we've lived through it. So, unfortunately, we have to sometimes be the bad guys and send the bad message, but it's in order to protect the fund. On page 1084 of the attachment from regarding the rules that have just been published for increases that can be paid, we are guided by the fact that they do allow you to use a published measure to increase pensions. We do use a published measure for our inflation guarantee of up to 2.5%. It's the Bureau of Labor.
Where is that?
It's at the very bottom of column 3, where it starts increasing annuities, including acceleration and cost of living increases. It says these final regulations clarify that a plan may provide an annual increase that does not exceed the increase in an eligible cost of living index for a 12-month period ending in which the increase occurs. And it refers at the top of the next page that it's a CPI measure issued by the Bureau of Labor Statistics. We do use CPIW, issued by the Bureau of Labor Statistics, for our inflation guarantee of up to 2.5%. So we feel we comply with that. In the middle of page 1085, the middle column, the second paragraph, halfway down, it talks about annuities being increased solely to reflect better than assumed investment performance, and that is permitted, but only if the assumed interest rate for calculating the initial level of payments is at least 3%. Well, as Ed pointed out to you in his comments, we do fulfill that. What we don't know is if we could combine those two requirements, which is what we are doing in our proposal. We're using an established measure. We're using investment gains above what's assumed, and then we're capping that. What we would ask is that we get this passed, and then we would go to the IRS for a private letter ruling. We have been advised that the IRS will not issue commentary on an idea. It must be an established part of the plan before we would be able to get a private letter ruling. And the sooner we would pass this provision, the sooner we could request that, so that if there are any concerns with it, we expect that we'd have an answer and can come back to you with modifications before this would ever kick in. Because keep in mind, the 5% cap will not apply until we recover. And unless we have 5 continuous years at 15% or higher, it's going to be several years before we recover and are able to share anything above the guaranteed 2.5%. The other question that was raised was on litigation from current retirees. And the boards did not take lightly their discussion on this particular issue. Our legal advisor did share with us that we could not alter the guarantee inflation up to 2.5% without providing something in return. We're not altering that piece of the post-fund provision. What we were advised is that it would be difficult to say that there is any guarantee of anything above the inflation increase because it is solely based on investment performance. And to say that you are harmed on the speculation that there could be something paid higher above that, we wouldn't know whether or not we'd confront that, from my understanding of his advice to us, until we actually got to the point where we were paying out the 5% cap and there would be money above that to pay. So that's our understanding of how we proceed. If we get sued, we'd have to deal with it. But we had some comfort level that as long as we weren't touching the 2.5% guarantee inflation, that there would be reason that we could expect some success in that regard. But I'm not an attorney. That's just my interpretation of what we were told. So if the other two directors would want to comment on that, I'd look to them.
Mr. Chair, my name is Dave Bergstrom. I'm the director of the State Retirement System. And I agree with Ms. Vanek's analysis based on the Attorney General that he pretty much stated that it would be hard to rely on future investment gains if someone tried to claim reliance for that. I would also like to add that this proposal is supported by the Minnesota Retired State Employees Association, which represents about 8,000 retired state employees. So you will likely hear some opposition today. But the organization that represents a good number of our retirees is supportive of this proposal as well. And I would like to add that I think this does have some benefit for retirees. Once we dig out of the hole, I think it adds a financial stability to our program. And, there's been a lot of newspaper articles of pension plans, private pension plans not fulfilling their needs. What this does in the long run would provide stability to our program and also make more equitable distributions. Rather than the highs and the lows, we would try to spread them out over time. So I think there is some interest in our retirees and a large group of them of supporting this proposal.
Mr. Chair, Gary Austin, Director of Teachers Retirement Association. TRA's board obviously does support this, and just to add to what's already been said, I guess, you know, that it does add stability. It does take out of the whole retirement picture the matter of timing as to, you know, is the market up and market down. We now have the situation where our retirees, our new retirees, are only going to get 2.5% for the foreseeable future, you know, for many years they were getting very generous increases, and we're basing retirement decisions on this. As Mary mentioned, you know, retirements are down because the post fund increases are down, and with this level of stability that this would create, it would help in the long term retirement planning of our members.
If what's the average length of someone collecting retirement benefits in your funds? 20 years? 10 years?
Mr. Chair, if someone retires at 65, their average life expectancy would be 82, 83, somewhere in that. A little higher for females.
So if you throw the early retirees in, we're talking 20 years?
Mr. Chair, I think that would be 15 to 20 years would be a good.
Mr. Chair, most of our retirees select a survivor plan, so you're talking two life expectancies, you know, the member and the spouse, and so combined, whether their normal life expectancy is probably at least 20 years.
Is that number going up?
Yes.
For all of us, we're probably going to live a lot longer during that. If you look at the chart on page 5, let's say a person retired in 78 or 79, and they're still living in 2004. Are they whole? Or are they not under what actually happened?
Mr. Chair, what was the year?
Are they whole or are they not whole in terms of
if they retired in what year? I'm sorry, I didn't. 78.
Started here.
Oh, okay.
Let's say you retired in 78 or 79 and you're still alive, under this scenario, are you whole or are you not?
Mr. Chair, you are not only whole, you're more than whole because of the increases we provide.
By how much do you think? Ballpark.
Oh, a lot.
A lot?
Yeah, it's a lot, yeah. Mr. Chair, I'd have to do the analysis. If you go back that far, the retirees are more than kept whole, just because of the large increases that we have had.
So the problem that existed for the first 4 or 5 years of your retirement has been more than made up for?
Yep. Okay.
Questions? Representative Thiessen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I did have one more question on the IRS piece. And the memo also raises this issue of the 5-year averaging, which seemed to be actually the biggest kind of potential problem. I was just wondering if by passing this, will we waive kind of the grandfather part of that? So can you comment on that a little bit?
Mr.
Or whether we can put, you know, start it in 6 months.
No, I don't think so. I'm surprised she hadn't. I've heard that she's talked to a lot of people, and people have asked me.
Mr. Chair and Representative Thiessen, we had discussions with a number of consultants. We certainly have in your packet those that took the very conservative approach. I did have discussion with a consultant we worked for many years, and his assessment was that the IRS did not anticipate the 5-year averaging because that is unique to the public sector funds with respect to this type of structure. That's why he felt that if we went forward and got the legislation passed, that would be included in our question to the IRS under a private letter ruling, so that if we did have to make any modifications before this would actually get implemented because we'd recovered, that we'd be able to come back and reassess that. He said it was his assessment that it really had been ignored because it wasn't anticipated that even existed.
Yeah, just follow up. And I guess my question is, if we pass this now and get the ruling, and then they say the 5-year is not okay. Currently, if we didn't pass the law, we said it's safe on the 5-year because of the grandfather. So is there a way that we can write the law so you can get the ruling, but still not run the risk of waiving the grandfather?
Mr. Chair, Representative Thiessen, we could put a delayed effective date on the provision.
That's what I was hoping. And we could still get the ruling at that point?
Aren't the components of what you're asking for the ruling, don't they exist under our current situation? Can't you ask for a ruling under our current law?
Mr. Chair, our current law, if not modified, as we understand, would be grandfathered in a good faith interpretation. But because we are asking to modify it by applying the cap, we would not totally comply.
So the federal regulation has changed since we adopted our current.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Well, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Larson.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Ms. Vanek, in lieu of what's happening around the whole country, I mean, we're not the only state that's in serious trouble. You look at California, you look at all the private pension plans. It seems to me that we should be talking to the members of Congress to get some definition to what we can do, because we certainly don't want all these lawsuits across the country, because they're going to be challenged. And it just seems to me we should be talking to our members of Congress to get some changes made in the IRS ruling so we can move ahead. Because otherwise, this is going to take years. This could go through through many courts and probably wind up in the Supreme Court, and that would be forever. And another thing, Mr. Chairman, the history of the post-fund increases, I'd like to have and maybe Mr. Martin could do this. I'd like to know what the increases in the Social Security benefits were from 92 up through 06. Because I've talked to a lot of I've been involved in this pension business for a long time, and I've talked to a lot of people on post-retirement, and they're not feeling intimidated or bad about having a 5% cap, the people that I talk to. Of course, you see all the superintendents and administrative people retiring under TRA, and I know we've got at least probably 25 people making around $10,000 a month or more in retirement. And with the post-retirement for those 5 years, the increases, you know, there are 5 years from 97 to through 2002, you know, we had 8% or better. And you know what that does, compounding those increases. So it's a good idea. And Mr. Chairman, many of us were not on the commission back in 2000 when this was first proposed, but... Mr. Martin, could you give us a little recap on what happened? Because this made so much sense at that time. But I'd like to just hear what happened back in 2002 that when this proposal was made, why who stonewalled it?
Our members, the proposal back in the 2000 era was for using a 10-year averaging period rather than a 5-year averaging period in effect for the post-fund increases. So any gain in any given year would be put into 10 little pigeonholes rather than 5 pigeonholes into the future, and portions of it then would accumulate. That proposal was never heard by the Pension Commission. It was not scheduled.
It was not heard?
It was not heard.
Who was chairman back then?
Members, in 2000 it would have been Representative Mayers. In 2001, 2002 it would have been Senator Dean Johnson.
Okay. Thank God we got a chair who hears every bill now.
Yeah. Yeah, and I understand that, Mr. Chairman, but you got to have some guts in this business to do what's right, and we keep not doing what is good public policy. That's our job, is to make good public policy. Forget about being in a popularity contest. You're not in a popularity contest. Your job is to make good public policy. If they don't like it, they'll throw you out. So I think we have to be tough.
And I hope on January 31st we're all still chuckling as we're sitting here listening to the 30th bill on an individual benefit. Sarah Larson point well taken. Okay, anything else? Okay, we should, I don't know if this will be Mr. Austin's last appearance before he retires. It perhaps will be. Thank you very much for your service. How many years did you run the fund?
34 and a half with PRA.
With the fund.
And 13 years as director.
13. Boy, time flies. I remember when you first, I remember when you first took over the fund. So and I think there's a, if anybody's interested, there's a coffee this afternoon at, you don't have to tell us, when's the coffee?
No, it's from 1:30 to 4 at the Retirement Systems Building. Okay. So
and thank you very much for your service all these years. Send us postcards from warm weather. Okay, Mr. Richter. Are Richter, Levang, Green, and Rapp together or not together necessarily? Okay. If everybody's separate, that's fine. If you're together, come together. Welcome.
Thank you.
I received your email. Thank you.
Well, that wasn't my email. You probably got an email from Gary Goldman.
Maybe that's okay.
That's who you probably got the email from. My name is John Richter. I am a member of a committee, a pension committee, that was formed under MRSEA in the West Central, which would be a subchapter of the chapter. And we meet all over the state as state retirees, and we are not in agreement with the state board and executive branch of MRSEA. And I just wanted to give you a little background on that, because that group has an election in St. Paul once a year for board of directors. And about 200 people of the 8,000 members attend. And so it's really is a recycling of a lot of officers through that board and through the executive offices of that group. And they are not really in touch. I'll tell you, they're really not in touch with the membership. And so I know Dave said that it's got that support. And in fact, a person from that group introduced this bill at our meeting of the MSRS. I am also a trustee. I'm not representing MSRS today. I'm a trustee elected by the retirees of Minnesota, and I'm the only retiree elected representative on the MSRS board. I visited with some of you folks last year, either by phone or in your offices. And it was uplifting to talk to some of you in dealing with this issue, because we were in opposition to Senate File 70, House File 40 then. We still are as a just pension group. And the grassroots retirees that I talk to other than in this pension group. First off, I'd like to address some of the things that were said previous, and one of them is where we are with retirees who received these very, very large benefits over a series of 4 years, which ended here in about 2001. But at present, at MSRS, that's the state retirees, the shift of people that have never ever received even 1 year of those benefits that averaged 40 years or 40% over 4 years, which would be 10% a year. As of this particular last December, end of December, 1/3 of the people that are retired today in MSRS never received even one of those 10% raises. And that is changing at the rate of 0.9% per month, so that by the end of 2006, December in 2006, the ratio will be something like 43.8% will have never received 1 year of that large benefit. By the December of 2007, over half, 54.6%, will have never ever received even 1 year of that large benefit. And so, in response to a question that was asked before, are we whole? Some of us are whole. Some of those people that went through and got the large increases are whole. More than whole, as Dave said. But then there's many more of us, and as time goes on, that aren't whole because we've already lost over the last 2 years to inflation and will probably lose to inflation this year and in years to come. Because the inflation rate, according to the labor statistics of the U.S. government, over the last 77 years when they've been keeping this stat, is 3.03%. We're only going to be allowed up to 2.5%. That means that retirees, on average, when you use statistical data, are going to lose over 0.5% a year, every year, until the post fund is made whole. So, in other words, 100%. So we have a problem with unfairness to a large group of people that's coming into being, and we're trying to spread the word at this point in time. It's inherently unfair to do this to those people, not even to keep up to inflation. Social Security, my understanding is they received 4.1% this last year is an increase. We will receive 2.5%, and we were real lucky this year because inflation was rated at 2.59. So that has been in our favor. One of the things I'd like to talk about this legislation, how it came through our board, and when it came through our board, there was very little, if no, discussion, and it really didn't mimic some of the models that were given to the board by the executive director. In fact, it comes up with a new premise that we had not seen. I came onto the board in May of 2004. I had been on the board from 1994 to 2000. Then I'm into retirement, so I have to go back off of the board. So I've had some board experience, and I just never have experienced the kind of non-discussion that came about with this bill. So I'm not sure where it came from and who's sponsoring it, but it is not for retirees. The problem with Senate File 70, House File 40, is it really doesn't resolve one of the major problems, two of the major problems. With the 5% cap, when we do become whole again, it's going to continue to allow non-inflationary rate of return money to go into the base. And we have come to the realization that this is not fiduciarily acceptable to do this. We should only be putting inflation increases into the base. And so we are recognizing our responsibility to do something different and make this a better situation. The other part of it is that we will not get there for 10 to 20 years. Mary said probably 5 years at 15%. That's not realistic. We did have that in the 90s. I don't think we're going to see those kinds of rate of returns. One of the problems with our rate of return is also is that we have to rely on benefit structure from 70% of what Howard's group does in the State Board of Investment. And the national average, when you look at all of the states, the rate of return response in the other states is 61%. So we're deficient right there. We're allowing ourselves to be exposed to a volatile market at about a 9% difference from the average in the country. And I think that's something that has been built based on lack of contributions. Our contributions are way down below the national average. The other two bills that you want to hear today, I would hope that you would do something about that for the future, because that's really important. But for us in the post fund now, we're stuck. We have a problem. The last thing I want to touch on is something that's in your packet. You should have a handout that says MRSEAWC Pension Committee Survey.
We have it.
Dated 10/11/05. And I'm not going to go through this except for two questions. And the two questions that I'd like to look at is number two, and I'll read it. The three boards, PERA, TRA, MSRS, voted to support Senate File 70 that will continue to limit inflation increases to 2.5% or the rate of inflation, whichever is less, as long as the post fund is in deficit. It is estimated by board staff that it will take 10 to 20 years before the post fund is not in financial deficit. Using the historical CPI inflation yearly annual rate of 3.03% as a projection for the future means that retirees will lose 0.53% annually for the next 10 to 20 years. Do you support this proposed legislation of the three boards? And through our process in conducting this survey, we had three people agree with the boards, 89 people disagree with the boards, and five people weren't sure. But the no answer here to this proposal by the grassroots of the people that we've been able to contact is 92%. Direct you to question number five. Question number five, the current legislative proposal of PERA, TRA, and MSRS, Senate File 70, has no provision for securing additional revenue for post-fund deficit reduction. The current post-fund, and at the time of this writing, is $4.3 billion. Do you support this proposal? And yes was four people, 88 no's, and seven not sure. Again, 89% were not in support of this, because this proposal, Senate File 70, has no way of catching up the post fund in a manner that we could start slipping back as the teachers' funds have, because we're at about 81% funded in the post, and we're at a point where it's very dangerous that you could go the other direction, and there will be nothing to absorb that big fund if it goes the other direction. The other handout I'm going to leave you with is that we do have a proposal coming forward. We would like to visit with some of you folks to see if you would be interested in this. We are making contacts around the state. We don't have a big budget. Most of it is out of our own pocket trying to do this, but we did manage to get a survey of 100 people already. We have a petition signed moving forward with a solution, and that solution is a two-part solution. One, to put additional money into the post fund, and the other part is to allow for additional inflationary increases for our people so that they may be made somewhat whole through their life expectancy in retirement. And this is probably going to affect a lot of people, and we've already had a lot of people sign on and agree with us in the essence of they're not retired yet, but they are about to retire. So I would stand for any questions if you would have any.
Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Richter, in your proposal for a solution to add additional money, where is that money from?
Well, I did give you the handout, and I didn't think it was appropriate for me to talk about our proposal at this hearing. So,
right.
But if I'll answer the question. And the proposal is looking at three sources, and it's only money that would be put into the post fund while the post fund is in deficit. It would end as soon as the post fund is out of deficit. So if you look at the back page of the second handout in there, it's got the proposal for Pension Solution Part 2. And there are three sources. The first one is something that I had gotten a good feedback from Representative Thiessen last year when I visited with him in his office, and it was about using 20%, 20 cents on the dollar of unused appropriations by every unit of government that utilizes these pension systems in order to get this thing whole again. So it's money, it's not new taxes, it's money that they didn't use in their budget period. And so we're looking at why not make this fund whole, because this thing could really be a boondoggle for the whole state of Minnesota. The second proposal there, if you look at it, is bonding, and there are some safeguards built in. I don't know if it would ever get used or not. I know it's been successful in other states, and I know it's been unsuccessful in other states. So I think it needs a real work to look at more safeguards as to when and how we bond and how we use that money in that bonding process.
Why can't we?
The last one, based on our surplus that we are projecting for the next 3 years, provided we can save the $400 million in the tobacco fee versus tax issue, is a 10% usage of any surplus collections that were not projected. So in other words, if the government in all levels, whether it's light deer licenses or it's sales tax or it's whatever, and they are participating in this pension fund, should be willing to give 10 cents on a dollar, 10% of their projected surplus to the post fund until it's caught up. These are just some ideas that our committee came up with, and all I can say about that is that if there's some better ideas out there, go for it.
So, Mr. Richter, you're ready. You could be a legislator with this kind of creativity.
This comes from a committee.
We have a whole list of members that are spending that tobacco money. you could just join right in. So, okay, thank you very much. Are you working with a member to get something like this drafted, or what? Not the second page. I think the first page is what you want drafted.
Well, both pages. We're looking for it for two separate bills. Are we working?
Can
with
I give
anybody?
You some advice?
Huh?
I'll give you some advice.
Okay.
Focus on the first page, not the second page.
Okay.
You're doing is a long list of people that are looking for somebody else's money, so I don't think you're going to get very far there.
That's why we separated it.
Okay, further questions? Senator Betzel?
Just a comment, Mr. Chair. You know, this. If you look at the bill number, it's Senate File 70 and House File 40. You know, so those bills would have been introduced probably the first week of the 2005 session. So if they're just kind of getting around now to putting some ideas together, I would hope that they'd hurry, because we've got kind of some deadlines that we have to meet as well, too.
Yeah, they're citizens. You've got some. Are you working with a legislator? You got somebody who's helping you get that drafted?
With one legislator that came to one of our meetings was Bud Heigergen. I can't believe I'm saying the name right. I'm probably saying.
Well, get him working, because he needs to get something drafted pretty quick here. Okay.
Okay.
Thanks. Appreciate it, Mr. Richter.
Thank you.
Mr. Levang? Did I say that correctly?
Yes.
Where did you work, Mr. Richter?
Department of Revenue is an auditor.
Ah. Taxes.
We may need you back here.
Why is this 101? That's a reasonable question. It's not.
Welcome.
Good morning. Chairman Fogelmiller, members of the committee. My name is Kurt Levang. I'm a former educator, retired in 1996. I was 26 years elementary principal, and I was 38 years in education.
What district were you in?
Howard Lake Waverly, Winston.
Mm-hmm.
Add one more. I'm representing the Elementary Principals Retirement Committee, and I am not the chair anymore because I'm retired. Can't be a chair, so I'm the liaison, I guess, is what you call me. I think I did teach in Fergus Falls, so.
Yes, Mr. Levang, I remember you.
All right.
I was not as strong at that time.
Yes.
Oh, really?
And I want to thank you, because you did a very commendable job. I was very, very supportive. I'm serving as a liaison because when you're principal, sometimes all you can do is just keep the building together. So I'm doing all the footwork, and I'm a member of the committee. I attend all TRA board meetings that I can, and I do come to the legislature and listen to the meetings and report back to the committee and also to all elementary principals through our divisions. Our group is not in agreement with Senate File 70 and House File 40 in its present form. We're not opposed to limits on raises, and we're not opposed to the stability of the fund. I retired in 96, so I got some very nice raises. Yeah, I think they were excessive. I mean, they really were, but there was no way to cap it, and it would have been good if they could have kicked in a circuit breaker, because you know what's coming after things like that. It's going to get tough. The cycle just repeats itself. So we're not against limits. I want you to know that. There's 5 points that I want to make out. Some of them were already made by the people that have just reported to you. Number one, the timeline on this, as was indicated, they run 10 years. Somebody said five. No way it's going to be five. 15 years might seem more logical to we're going to get back to where there would be some money available that would be above the inflationary raise. So the timeline is considerable as far as this 5% that you're talking about having to kick in or be relevant. Number two, I am concerned about the grandfather clause as far as the IRS is concerned. Why 5%? Why not 6 or 5.5 or 5.25 just to get them off your back so that we don't break the grandfather clause? I think doing that, you're asking for trouble down the road. If it's 15 years down the road, we may not be around here, but somebody's going to have to deal with it. It really worries me. That's a very big worry. You can have consultants tell you this and tell you that, and it doesn't come down to fact until somebody makes a ruling. So that's the second thing that is very concerning to the elementary principals. Third thing that has been talked about, and this comes from TRA, is that the retirees, the first check that they receive is the second lowest check of all the states that were surveyed in the survey that they had. They did not survey all the states. It was about three-quarters of the states that they got response from. But the check that they receive is about the second lowest check of all those states. That's a tough place to start out with, but what has been the saving grace has been the increases on the on your retirement, and that has caught up. My brother retired in North Dakota as a superintendent, and he started out quite a bit higher than I did, but I caught up with him quickly. So basically, that has to be addressed. I think your next bill that you're going to be talking about, the Minneapolis system, does touch on addressing it. It doesn't hurt it. It helps it, because in there, there's a provision to get that first check up a little bit higher by increasing the formula by 0.3. But it isn't really going to affect people now. It's going to affect people way in the future. But it's not going to hurt. It's not going to hurt. It's going to help. The affected group, from what we can see, is about those who retired 3 to 4 years ago who have not received any raises, and those that are going to retire in the next 15 years who are not going to be getting any raises, and they're going to be stuck at that second lowest check. Not fair. The inflation factor, number five, does pose somewhat of a problem in that raises are capped at 2.5% and inflation can be 3, and John had just reported, and I think he reported very well, and I'm not going to get into it, that these people received the second lowest check, and you must keep remembering that, aren't keeping up with inflation. They're falling a little bit below after receiving the second lowest check. I didn't, and neither did anybody that retired in 96, 97. And I agree also with what was reported by Mr. Richter, that what should be added to the base, and our group does, is the inflation factor, not the market increase, because that causes a problem. It did cause a problem, caused the biggest problem we ran into, because you get an increase of 6%, and then you got to get an increase of 3% on top of that. As you said, it causes problem. But we could be looking at something a little bit different, that when the fund recovers, you could be looking at a 13th check or something, but not to affect the fund in piling more on top of the raises. That is not a solution. So in summary, I would ask the committee to be very careful in this bill, the bills that you have in front of you, because a quick fix can end up in big problems. And IMP and a few other things that came through here were a quick fix. We don't need more problems. We don't need them. You don't need them. Nobody needs them. And I think a good, long study, pulling in everybody to look at this problem carefully and trying to come up with something rather than a quick fix is the best way to go, and I would encourage you to do that. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer. My comments were very general, probably recapping what had been previously said.
Questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Thank you for your service to the schools. Mr. Green, Mr. Yanda.
I'm assuming when he says Ruiz, he means something.
Yeah.
Good morning.
Good morning. I'm with the St. Paul Ramsey County local school employees group that works with PERA.
And you are, your name is?
My name is Lee Green. I've been retired since 1993. I'm here because Glenn Erickson, who normally would come to these meetings, is having a stress test. I don't know why he'd have any stress, but he is. Frank Yanda is also homesick at this point. My comments will be really brief because I was here only to listen and find out what's going on. Several comments. I retired in 1993. As far as I know, I'm whole. I've been paid ever since then. I don't think that they're going to take my pension away from me. One of the other things that I've listened to is that we'd like to have more money. I guess you can't get more money unless you can find it someplace, and I'm not sure where that's coming from. Dealing with our particular group, we have a luncheon once a month, and we do have people in to talk about the pension fund. Mary comes in, and Howard comes in to let us know what's going on. In the last 2 years, we've asked for questions from the audience. We've had one person stand up and say that he wants all his money now. And that's basically what's happened there. The rest of the group appears to be happy with the change, and they're concerned with making sure that not only they have some future pension without it deteriorating, but that if they've got some kids working for them or working in the system, they'd like to make sure that they would be covered as well. And that's about what I've got to say.
Thank you.
Okay.
Questions?
I don't know.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Mr. Rapp.
My name is Ed Rapp, and I represent Education Minnesota Retired. And let me emphasize, just I don't represent Education Minnesota. I represent Education Minnesota Retired. We're a subsidiary, I guess, of it. But we don't have necessarily the same legislative objectives. And I got to be honest, we're sometimes an embarrassment to the parent organization. And that's probably what I'm doing here. I do not have a prepared statement. The only thing I have is a copy of the bill. Senate File 70 and House File 40 I first downloaded a year ago. And it has big ramifications, this bill, so I sat back and took it easy and waited for about 20 or 30 pages to pile up, and I find out it's one sentence. The full post-retirement adjustment percentage certified to each participating public pension plan or fund must not exceed 5%. Wow. Well, I agree with the last three speakers. I agree with them very, very much. The position of my organization is, please, no, don't do it. First of all, number one, the people out there teaching today are going to retire, and one of the previous speakers said it, next to the bottom, and I believe it's next to the bottom of the list that says these are the coordinated plans in the country, some, I think, 37 of them, and we rank 36th from the top. We trail. And then we've got the retired teachers out there who I represent, and I've been retired for 12 years, and frankly, I'm doing well, because I sat there, I retired in 93, and I sat there and got those increases, 11%, 10%, 9%, 6, 5, 4. It was nice. It took me 10 years to catch up, but now I rank pretty well with my contemporaries out throughout the United States in those 37 coordinated plans. But you're going to cap it. I got it because I got the money. It belonged to us. I believe it belonged to us because I put in 6% a year, and I was matched at 6% a year, and the district told me that's part of my salary. They're 6%, so they charged us every time I made a settlement of, let's call it a 6% settlement. I ended up putting 1.5% on the salary schedule, which didn't meet the cost of living because they said, well, you've got to pay for those increases to TRA, to Social Security, to insurance programs, and so on. So that money's ours. And you're telling me now I can only have 2.5%, roughly, the cap is 5 with the CPI, that I can't have that anymore, that I can't catch up. Well, if we're trailing, we're at the bottom of the country, we're trailing. And if we're capped at roughly a market of 2.5% and a CPI of 2.5%, how could we ever catch up? Now, I'm not here with a solution. I'm right here with the problem with this bill. I think we pay you guys to come up with solutions. I don't know. I'm scared sometimes because, well, as I know Representative Murphy knows, that as a Federation member back forever, we used to have a thing called Fig Newton's Law. And one of the Fig Newton's Laws, and I was thinking about that on the way in, says that no one is safe when the legislature is in session. Now, that's tongue-in-cheek.
We're not in session right now.
Excuse me?
We're not in session right now.
Huh? March 1st. Oh, okay. That's a good point. So I'll quote another one. The legislature giveth, and the legislature taketh away. I'm frightened of you piling up, honestly, too big a post-retirement fund, too much surplus in there. And you talked about the smokers, you know, about the smoking money that everybody wants. Well, I'm a smoker, and I'm carrying you guys on my back right now, and you know it. We lost $1 billion that was put away in the settlement. Now we got another 75 cents a pack that may or may not continue in effect. But the point is, we certainly don't want the post-retirement fund to have people looking at it and saying, what's going to happen? And I don't know in this sentence. I really don't know. Does that mean I'm going to get 5% no matter what if there's surplus money in there? So, because the last 2 years, I lost money. We did not hit the CPI. And that could go on. And I'm a retired math and economics teacher. And let me tell you, when you talk about compounding, that goes for increases, but that goes for decreases too. And now we're 2 years into negative, in real dollars, a negative pension. Well, I can go on, and I won't. Let me say I agree with the speakers. This is going to help possibly the people who are teaching today, because I think you can't do this without going average, at least nationwide. You're going to have to take our 1.7 multiplier and make it 2.0. That's the median out there. You're going to have to take our five-year I-5 and change it to I-3. That's the median out there. I wish you could take our salaries that trail by $1,000 a year nationwide, trails the average, and increase that. That may be or may not be beyond, but certainly it's beyond this committee. But what are you going to do to us who are retired? And the ones that retired in the last few years, they weren't as lucky as I was. And, of course, mine wasn't all luck either. I doubled in 9 years. But I doubled for the market returns. I doubled for a thing that no one ever wants, called a bounce back, and so on. But let me say that my organization, Education Minnesota, and I emphasize retired, says that in this form it can't go. We will never, ever catch up. And that market return that we put right on the base helped us catch up, helped me catch up. The rest of them aren't going to do it. They're not going to make it.
Okay. Where did you teach?
I taught economics and mathematics.
Where?
Columbia Heights. In fact, when you first ran, I think you ran from the district that included Columbia Heights.
It's a few years.
I just want you to know I made some drops, by the way, Senator.
We could have stopped it.
We could have killed the whole thing, you're right. Oh, and I want to say one thing before I leave, that I also am not going to speak to it, but as an organization, we support the IMP as written. And we certainly support solving this Minneapolis thing. It's so overdue, and we have to. And so we're in favor of that, but I will not speak to it again. But remember, we're the retired.
Okay. Thank you, Ed. Appreciate it very much for taking the time. Anybody else want to testify? Welcome.
Good morning, Chair, committee members. My name is Laura Dobosinski, and I am the business manager for the Minnesota Retired State Employees Association. I'd like to read into record today a letter that was sent to each of you.
Could you spell your name, last name?
D as in David, O-B-O-Z-E-N-S-K-I.
Thank you.
Okay. Dear committee members, the Minnesota Retired State Employees Association, otherwise known as MRSA, MRSCA, Board of Directors unanimously supports Senate File 70, House File 40. The legislation addresses the post-retirement investment fund and limits future post-retirement increases to 5%. It is in our opinion as a board that capping future post-retirement increases for retirees is a prudent decision to ensure the financial integrity of the post fund. We are pleased that the current post fund deficit has been reduced from over $5 billion to approximately $4 billion because of 2 years of positive investment returns. But there remains a significant unfunded liability. We believe this is progress. However, we are in agreement with the three boards representing Minnesota State Retirement System: the Teachers Retirement Association, TRA, and the Public Employees Retirement Association, PERA, that the responsible action is to limit future increases at 5% for all retirees. Our organization represents retired state employees and currently has a membership exceeding 8,000 benefit recipients. We are committed to maintaining a financially sound retirement plan for our current and future members. Capping future increases will provide a more equitable distribution of increases and reduce the post fund's vulnerability to market fluctuations. And we'd like to thank you for your consideration. This letter is signed by the President of the Board, Ruth Hewsom. I'd like to leave a copy for you.
Great, thank you. Questions? Appreciate it much. Anybody else? Butter.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll speak very briefly. I will speak. I am Pat Anderson, the state auditor. I'm a member of the peer board, and I also sit on the SBI board, so I get it from all ways. We did have a joint meeting, it was a year ago, I believe, or a year or two ago, with all three boards, TRA, MSRS, and PARA, and we were, I think, almost unanimously supported this, all board members across all three boards. I think what you've heard today has been very consistent. Even those that are opposed have consistently said that we need to do something to have some sort of cap or something so that we don't create essentially these generational problems that we have. Those who retired before the large increases essentially got the money. And so now we have a generation. Mr. Richter, who does sit on the TRA board or what was on the TRA board, John? MSRS, I'm sorry. I talked about the fact that about a third of the MRS retirees now have retired since the large increases and are only getting inflation. And that is very true. What you have is one generation that got huge increases, and because that money's gone, you have people being limited to inflation or 2.5%. And and this solution with having a cap would have allowed us to never have gotten into this problem in the first place. As you can see from the charts, 5% is higher than inflation has been in the last 25 years. And if we would have capped it at 5%, investment returns would have been enough that even with the losses that occurred in the last couple years, we would still be having 5% increases because there would have been excess dollars there. And retirees as a whole would have been treated equal and wouldn't be in the problem of perhaps getting less than inflation if inflation runs over 2.5%. I do think it's a very valid concern that if we get into a period where inflation is running higher, you know, what do we do at that point? Because I think the purpose of public pensions is to keep people whole, to keep them at least at the level of inflation. So I would throw that out. This is unanimously supported, again, by all the boards, by SBI, which is State Board of Investment. And it's a solution, and it provides that we really won't get into this problem that you're seeing now. So I would encourage the commission to support this proposal. If you believe that the inflation at 2.5 is an issue, you can maybe think about that as adjusting that number potentially for down the road. And again, this doesn't need to go into effect now. It's going to be, I predict it's going to be at least 20 years before we are whole within the post fund anyway. And so if you want to put an effective date, you know, 3 years out or 2 years out or whatever, it's not going to really matter, frankly. And maybe you can change the inflation rate at that point, too. So that would be my my 2 cents from the board perspective. And I'll stand for questions.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Appreciate it. Questions?
Thank you. Much. Thanks.
Could the fund director, the three fund directors come up again real quick? Thirty-eight states use the CPI. Why don't you want to use the CPI?
Mr. Chair, 38 states use the CPI. Almost all of those have a cap on the CPI or use half of the CPI. They don't use the full CPI.
Okay.
The concern if we tied it totally to the consumer price index would be during a period of high inflation, you could run up serious deficits and you would be adding an inflation risk to the post-retirement fund. What we're trying to do is blend it. We want to provide some level of inflation protection and yet take in the needs to provide a little bit more than the 2.5% over time. But almost all of the states who have CPI might pay half of the CPI or 75% or cap it at 3 or 4%.
So why isn't that in your proposal?
Mr. Chair, part of the reason it is not part of the proposal is we are not 100% funded. We're about 81-82% funded right now. So if you started paying inflation, let's say even 3 or 4%, the costs are going to go up. It will take us longer to get out of the hole, or potentially we would never recover from that deficit. We are in a deficit situation now, and we need to dig out of that deficit. if you start paying inflation increases, that will add to that deficit.
But if you're a retiree who's not keeping up with inflation, we just say that's life?
Mr. Chair, I think at some point you don't want to have a pension plan totally tied to inflation because you might not be able to afford it. I think you need to balance the needs of financial integrity, you know, and provide some inflation relief. But you could run into periods of 7, 8, 9% inflation, and over a period of time, you could have serious funding issues. What our boards are concerned about is we want to provide a stable fund, some inflation protection, and keep those two together.
Mr. Austin.
Mr. Chairman, in just additional response, if you're going to guarantee an increase, you have to fund that increase. If we're going to guarantee inflation, then we'll have to make some assumption in the future as to what that increase or what inflation would be in the future. So, or if we were going to increase our guarantee to, say, 3%, you have to fund that. Now, we currently have a 6% earnings assumption in the post fund to fund the benefit as it is, plus we are in guaranteeing an inflation increase up to 2.5%. So that's putting us at an earnings assumption of 8.5%. If we want to increase our guaranteed increases but to say 3%, then that's going to make the overall guarantee or the overall earnings assumption up to 9%, and we're pushing it pretty hard at that point. So that's, if you're going to guarantee increases, you have to fund that and fund that up front, and that is quite expensive.
Okay, all this is expensive.
Right.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. All right, let's why don't members ponder the Bedsold Smith bill, and let's then just move on to the. They introduced it as a courtesy to the. We don't even know if Bedsold and Smith support the bill right now. We just know they.
It doesn't say by request.
Huh?
It says by request.
I have some questions.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think most people in the pensionary know that many of these bills get introduced just so we can get them before the commission. So, Mr. Richter, we don't even know if the authors support it yet. So, don't beat up the authors yet. We don't know if they support it yet. So, but okay, let's then deal with the other items. Just a refresher on what has actually passed the Senate on these other items. And Mr. Burke, you're going to briefly talk about the first items, the funds, state funds, or Mr. Martin?
Mr. Martin.
Mr. Burke on state funds.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman, you want the Senate position on the state funds?
Well, I think all we want to do is say, where are we at here? Where are we starting, pretty much starting fund on those? Those were passed. I think the commission was fairly supportive of all the items on number two. The Minneapolis teacher one was, we all know, was a little more iffy in terms of the whole commission. But I think we had come to a consensus on the statewide funds and that we had to increase their contributions. So I think just a review of those, and I think the House held up on those, as I understand it, because there was some concern in the Ways and Means Committee that that might not have been totally funded yet. Is that a fair assessment of why the House kind of slowed down there? I think it is. So, but the Commission, I think, generally thought we should do those. So why don't you just remind us what those items are?
An amendment that incorporated all that?
You want to have the fund directors tell us? Why don't we have the fund directors tell us what passed the Senate? And again, I think these statewide fund ones were ones that we had kind of juggled the timing of the phase in, and I think that the commission was pretty unanimous that we should go forward with these. So,
Mr. Chair, my name is Dave Bergstrom, and I'm the director of the Minnesota State Retirement System. And you have three bills in front of you that increase contribution to the largest plans that MSRS administers. All three plans are over 90% funded. However, we need contribution increases to keep them well-funded and move back to 100% funded. All three of the increases were passed by the Legislative Commission on Pensions and Retirement last year. The Senate passed them. They went over to the House and did not pass. The House had other issues, such as funding PERA, that were more urgent than increasing our contributions. I have some handouts that explain in more detail
the phase in
and how they worked that were approved last year by the Pension Commission.
And you might remember, members, that we altered the phase in based on discussion from what was originally introduced. We altered it based on discussions between the funds and the employee groups. I think there was kind of a consensus that this phase in was something that was acceptable to, do I get all three of these?
Yes.
Was acceptable to the employee groups also. Is that a fair assessment?
Mr. Chair, that is a fair assessment. I believe that the employee unions support the contribution increase. I believe the Commissioner of Finance supports the contribution increase. So we were trying to reach something that would pass, increase contribution, and delay the impact until July 1 of 2007 and phase it in over time. That way the state can budget for it, employees can budget for it. So I will start with the general plan, if that one is okay.
Okay.
That one is the one with the staple in it. We are currently collecting a 4% employee contribution and a 4% employer contribution. What we are looking at, starting July 1 of 2007, going from 4 to 4.25, in 08 from 4.25 to 4.5, until we reach the full 1% increase up to 5% by July 1 of 2010. We are increasing both employee and employer contributions equally. When fully impacted, assuming certain increases in state budget, the cost of this would be about $27.7 million to the state. So there is a state impact. We have been collecting 8%, 4%, and 4%, and that's actually less than our ongoing costs of the program. Our ongoing costs to pay for future benefits is about 9%. We were able to keep our contributions lowest in the state, low in the country. Part of that was because we were overfunded. So we are looking at phasing in the contribution rates as well as trying to balance the needs of the state and the employees.
Okay.
Do you want me to move on to the
Mr.
Chair? The second plan would be the correctional plan. By far, the correctional plan, even though it is still 92% funded, is the plan that needs the highest contribution rate change. So on the correctional plan, we are looking at going from the 5.69% employee contribution, phasing it in over time to 8.60%, again, phasing that in over a four-year period. We are looking at phasing the employer contribution from 7.98% up to 12.10%. These additional contributions are attributable to several things. One is we've had a large influx of employees in the 96, 97, 1998 timeframe. A lot of employees at that time were moved from our general plan to the correctional plan. Because of that, they already had state service. They tended to be older. That drove up the cost. And as we discussed at the last meeting, we're seeing a longer life expectancy with this group, and we are also seeing a higher incidence of disability, which also increases the cost. So that is the proposal for the correctional plan, which also was approved last year by the Pension Commission and passed the Senate.
Okay.
And, Mr. Chair, the last plan would be the State Patrol plan. That plan is still very well funded, but as we look forward, again, we are collecting under the normal cost of the program. And at your last meeting, you approved some assumption changes that will lower that funding of that program. And what we are proposing in that program is that we would go from an 8.4% employee contribution to a 9.8% employee contribution and an employer contribution from 12.6 to 10.2. Because the change is more modest, we phase that in over a two-year period rather than a four-year period. And the cost to the state, because it has fewer members, is when it's fully implemented about $1.1 million.
It's actually going down. Am I missing something? 12.6 to 9.10 to 10.1. Isn't that?
10.1, yes. Oh, I'm sorry. That's a.
Is there a typo there?
There's a typo there.
Okay, what's the typo?
Let me get the bill. Sorry. Mr. Chair, it should be 14.6.
The last one?
The employer should be 14 point. Okay, the first phase, the last one should be. Okay. The final rate would be 14.6%. I apologize.
One should be what instead? 13 something?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, yes. Sir.
Why don't you just update that and get it
sure.
to us?
Sure. I apologize for the typo. 13.6, Mr. Chair.
That one's getting pretty hefty, isn't it? I think maybe some further work with the staff on justification of this one would be helpful.
Sure.
So we understand the numbers better.
Mr. Chair, we'd be happy to. What we need to do is tie in the changes, assumption changes okay. you adopted to the most recent actuarial valuation. And what I'll okay. do is have the actuary provide some information.
And work with the staff on that so we can get a little more comfort on that one. Okay, any question on those? Is Representative Smith, it's fair to say that that was Ways and Means Committee on the House side wasn't quite ready to go over on these yet, and that's just an issue you have to work through in the House? The Commission had supported all this. So.
Mr. Chairman, I think that's correct, yes.
Well, I want you to keep us informed about what's possible, because I think earlier rather than later on this stuff would be better, probably. So.
All right.
Okay, then... last item, why don't we just review what did pass the Senate on teachers. Mr. Martin.
Members, there's another large piece of staff materials in your packets. It relates to Senate File 1057, the third engrossment, specifically Article 2, which was the part of Omnibus 2005 session Omnibus 2, that related to the Minneapolis Teachers Plan and the consolidation of the Minneapolis Teachers Plan into TRA. If you flip to the second page of that, away from the cover page, there's a quick seven-point summary of what happens in Article 2 of the Senate file. The first item has to do with Minneapolis teachers and authorizes the Minneapolis public school system to issue bonds for some or all of the Minneapolis teacher unfunded pension liability, and if those bonds are issued, there would be additional assets that would be transferred to TRA. If the bonds are issued, they would be serviced from all or a portion of the current money that Minneapolis teachers gets as special direct state aid.
And that's an authorization. Presumably they yes. would not do that unless it worked for them financially.
Yes, Senator. It's not clear what incentive the school district has to get into this, since it's basically a wash item, but it is a placeholder. If bonding were to make some sense, it would allow for the right language to be crafted. At the moment, there doesn't seem to be an economic reason to do it.
Right.
The second item has to do with the consolidation of the Minneapolis Teachers Plan into TRA. All active, deferred, and retired Minneapolis teacher members would become TRA members. All the liabilities, all the assets, all the records of Minneapolis teachers goes over to TRA. The third item has to do with contribution increases for TRA members to support the benefit increase that's set forth in point four. There's a 0.5% increase in member contributions and in employer contributions. In addition, there is an additional contribution made split equally by the state of Minnesota, by the Minneapolis Public School System, and by the city of Minneapolis. equal to essentially 0.25% of TRA's covered payroll, in the neighborhood of about $9 million per year, which would would address the unpaid portion of the cost of TRA based on the 2005 session actuarial assumptions or actuarial cost estimate. My understanding is TRA is currently having a cost estimate done, trying to adapt the 2005 numbers to the most recent actuarial work. It looks like there's slippage. It looks like that 0.26 of pay is not going to be enough. Minneapolis Teachers has further investment losses. There's some better situation in TRA, but it's a net problem. Slightly more money than the 0.26, but that's what the bill provides for. Item 4 is a benefit increase. This would be a prospective service benefit increase of 0.3%. Most TRA members, at least the members who are in the level benefit formula, get currently a 1.7% factor applied to their high five for each year of service. This would increase that by 0.3 to 2%. And again, it's prospective service only, so it has the greatest impact for the youngest, least length of service currently teachers. 5 is an extension of the TRA amortization date. Currently, the amortization date is 2020. This would extend the amortization target date to 30 years instead of the 15 that are remain. 6 has to do with the existing Minneapolis Teachers Plan and provides a job preference for Minneapolis Teacher Pension Fund employees with the any one of the three major pension plans. And then the last item has to do with funding the state contribution increases. One is the state's portion of the 0.26 extra contribution made under 0.3, provided for under 0.3. There's also language about the state paying the TRA regular employer contribution increase that relates to the benefit improvement for this biennium.
Okay, and then in addition, there was the IMP, one-year IMP.
Members,
what percent was that?
There's a shorter memo in your packets, the May 18th, 2005 memo. It's relatively 10, 12 pages maybe, 8 pages.
Got it, yep.
This is the summary of the bill, the second engrossment of the bill, but essentially has all the component parts. What we've talked about on this summary is item A up on top, the MSRS contribution portions, and item B in the middle. In addition, there are some other items in Omnibus 2 as put together in the Senate. Item C is the special pre-69 teacher post-retirement increase. D is a pension default insurance pool proposal. E is the elimination of deferred annuities augmentation for all new hires. F is a change in the maximum salary for pension purposes for some individuals who were currently capped or were previously capped at the governor's salary. There was some change in the 2005 special session to this, so this is less pertinent. G has to do with early retirement incentives for state government, a proposal largely coming out of the middle management group, I believe, but would apply to all state employees. And then H, the last item, is a special study for the statewide volunteer fire lump sum pension plan possibility.
Okay. I think as the budget has turned out, all of this actually is funded, because you have the one-time money that was left over from the biennium and stuff, and there is money in the tax relief account. So even the IMP piece, theoretically, this still holds together all of these provisions, except for, Mr. Austin, have you calculated the 0.26, or Mr. The 2.6 is not quite enough now? And from a TRA perspective, what do you know what that new number would be, or not quite yet?
Mr. Chairman and members, we have been working with our actuary to come up with those numbers. We have gotten some preliminary numbers that we're looking over. But,
okay. You know, but it's more than the 0.26.
Definitely, yes.
Double or not double?
Like I said, the preliminary numbers we got went from 0.26 to 0.59, which is it's another $10 million a year.
Hopefully, as you work the number over, it won't be that serious. This feeds the notion that the longer we wait here, the more expensive this keeps getting. So, okay, and I think where we are is the House is trying to figure out what's good public policy and what's doable in the House, which can pass, and what's good public policy, what that combination is, and the Senate is waiting to work with you, see if we can resolve some of this stuff. We freely admit that we had 54 votes because there's some honey in this bill also. It's not just... I think our sense is that you probably need that to kind of get a package passed. We don't know. We're waiting to see what's possible, so... Anybody want to add anything?
Mr. Chairman,
Senator,
I can't make the last two meetings.
Okay.
You've changed those dates, so I can't
Sorry.
Make it. So, but we did have an issue at the end of the session, which was very disturbing, and that was the fact that a pension provision appeared in a conference committee report, and that had to do with the St. Louis CART issue, and that is really very, very disturbing. Now, that's going to cost the funds a lot of money, and I don't know where we are in that, but it would be nice to have a report. I know, Mr. Okay. Martin, this might have implications much beyond the St. Louis Park issue, and that just can't happen. That was very, very disturbing. I know Senator Betzwald was chair of the conference committee on our side, and I know how displeased he was, and all of us were, and... we have got to absolutely prevent our members from pulling those kinds of things. And I think, Ms. Vanek, it'd be nice to have I probably won't be at the meeting, but we should have a report, an update on what's happened with that issue, if there's a court challenge or what's going on. But this is serious business when this happens in the legislature.
Ms. Vanek, why don't you write something up for us? Tell us what that situation is. Senator Betzel, do you concur with that?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Maybe we need to adjust the law slightly. Representative Kelly. Who's the rep? Latz?
Latz.
Senator Kelly won't be surprised that the senators on this commission feel that way. There's an addition in the packet, I believe, the memo we got from the department. Is that in there or no? Oh, you didn't have that? Okay, we'll forward to your office. We have a report. I remember the department of corrections, they have to adjust some of those positions and title and stuff, and they're reporting to us. I received a copy of that. We'll get that out. Everything that we're going to discuss is pretty much on those agendas, except for I think we're going to discuss the disability issue and some fund bills that are not controversial that are coming in and stuff. And if individual members have things that they want on the agenda, please let me know.
Sure.
We're willing to take on whatever members bills. Think we need to take on. I will try to winnow the individual list as best I can. And we'll try to get as much of this tied up before session starts as possible.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Larson?
You also have a letter from Ms. Vanek about the disability issues. You're going to take that up?
Yes.
We have a memo. I have a memo. You have the memo. Mr. Martin has a memo.
We'll get that out to members.
Good.
There's been some court activity on this issue, and I, Representative Thiessen, you want to see the legal work on all that? Have you already seen it? Okay. If other members are interested, let my office know or let the commission staff know, and they can get you the briefs on what's happening there. It's an area we do have to take a look at. There's some serious implications here if we're not careful.
Okay, thank
you, members. We'll apparently the House has a caucus. The House majority has a caucus on the 31st at 10 o'clock, so we'll start at 8 o'clock instead. It might be a few minutes after 8. I have to drop my daughter off at 8, so 8:05, 8:10. You're going to send something. Is that okay? Can members start at 8? You guys have to come in.
You don't want to.
Hey, meeting adjourned.
It's okay, man.
Cost you money. Cost you more.